So, start with a broad question. What is your overall task here? The big goal?
Big goal.
The thing that you're trying to accomplish.
Personally,
Not personally, with the task.
trying to be as simple as possible.
Broad meaning, like you're trying to create change, right? You're trying to train education force, right? So you're trying to create a high quality training, right? And so inside of that, what are some of the thoughts that you've had? What are some things that you would need to teach? Don't get too specific. Think broad, and then you can go into the details.
Programming,
Okay, so it's programming.
queuing,
Queuing.
that's probably what you see there. That how to take the ownership in the session.
Taking ownership of the session, that's always going to be the coach's
Responsibility.
responsibility. Okay. What are some other things?
At the moment, I think that's it.
Where do you think most trainers fail? So you've come up with trainers who've trained alongside you. You've been in some different environments. What are some reasons trainers fail and why some trainers make it? Some key differences that you notice.
Is there enough progress in their sessions? Workouts for the client.
Why do you think they do not know how to progress them?
One is first, I don't think.
Do you think they care? Why do they not care?
The signs of it? Well, why don't they, first, they're not smart enough, I would say.
Could be potentially, but is training really that hard?
You understand the concept now.
No. Okay, what is another reason? What are other possible reasons that a trainer, we could tell that they don't want it, or you can tell that they don't care.
They don't.
Why do you care so much?
Just in me. I think first they're paying a lot for their session. Showing value has been always a priority with interacting with clients in the sessions.
Has that been in every job that you've had? Okay. So you care about the job. Is there a possibility where a reason for trainers failing is they don't care about the job?
They don't like the job of us.
I don't think they respect what it says. I'm sure the coach aspect. So on the broad view, the first reason is like, why are you a coach? Like, are you here just because you want to wear a uniform? Or what does this mean to you? Because so to your ownership thing that you stated, I like to start very broad and like, what does coaching mean to you? But if it means nothing, then the effort that they would need to put in to care about progressions or queuing is not going to be there. They have to first care and realize how of an important of a job that is. Would you agree? So on a very broad view, it's like getting people to understand why you're here. If they can't do that, you can't do your job, right? So I try to find a reason of why they want to be a coach. To try to figure out what you should teach, what is that coach's job? What would you say that coach's job is?
Coach's job is to find the client's need, not what they want, and take them through a session that will enable them to move better and achieve their goal in a bigger scale.
What are some other responsibilities of the coach?
sponsoring the coach. There's knowing the movements, how to teach the movements, right?
So that teaching elements, I'm saying. Trainers are the ground floor of education, right? A lot of the times we hear people come in and they're saying a bunch of goals, but they don't really match up to where that person is, or they only know limited goals. So it's like a first line of education as well, as an educator. And like Tier said, being able to identify where they're at and how to get them to the next goal, right? So then the next question is, well, what are the things, and this is now starting to go into the exercise science, now what parts of exercise science do we need to learn? What are the first parts that you learned, and what are the first parts you think you should teach?
The first part was, first was movement, then understanding the anatomy behind the movements, then the energy system.
Mm-hmm. So I like to back up more to try to build a landscape for trainers to figure out how they're going to use all that knowledge that you just said. So I view it as like, what is available in fitness? And this is when I ask the mom question. If you were to try to train your mom, what would you need to know in order to train her? And what are the most important things? Because the first thing when people think about fitness is what? What do they want to do immediately?
Grow muscles.
They want to grow muscles and lift weights, right? Is that fitness?
Part of it.
What's more important than that, were to say that we're going to be training mom?
Functionality. Safety. Health-oriented, health-centered.
Okay, so let's think about health. How would we know, and how would we get someone to healthy?
Have them move.
And what systems are you looking at?
Oxidative.
Well, like our heart, right? Heart health. Respiratory health first. So kind of a little bit backwards to what you said first. You said energy systems last. But if we're talking about mom, I want to look at energy systems first. And then, so then that opens up a bunch of different questions. How would we know whether heart health is or respiratory health is, where their energy systems are at? How would we test for it, and how would we improve it? Because if we know if that base is non-functioning, we can't almost do anything else. It's very hard to do everything else. Do you agree or disagree?
Yeah, I agree.
All right, so that's why the bike test suffices as the first test I like to do. To kind of think about it. You kind of already said all these answers, but like the functionality of it. So if we're thinking, so let's understanding heart health, respiratory health. I think what is the major joint mechanism you would be most concerned about first?
Hips.
So it leaves us with squat, right, over deadlift, just because it could show more degrees of the ankles, knees, and hips. So then the air squat becomes very critical to understanding where that person is, all the things that come alongside with that. And then the last one, kind of the strength, easiest one that we've done it in the past is the push-up, right? So I like to start with the narrative of the mom, what's available to us in fitness, because then it helps everyone else assess the normal gym goer. It also helps us assess if we're looking at athletes. It doesn't really matter who it is. I think everyone has overcomplicated all the other tests. But if we're talking about novice or intermediate, and these tests work, it's when we get to high intermediate and advanced that we can get to the more complex tests. That is at which point I like to teach the joint actions. After we understand what we are trying to develop. That makes sense?
Yeah.
So which joint actions would you go with first?
Well, since we said hips is most important. The hip.
So let's just say the anatomy of the hip. So if you're going to teach the details as you're going to teach someone, you can maybe start there. So painting the picture of everything else, but then on the practical version, start on hip anatomy. So how would you teach hip anatomy?
There's so much. So I'll start with teaching with the squat movement and hip movement, the hinge movement, and go with teaching the muscles that are involved within those movements. So go over the anatomy.
Back up more steps though before you go to a specific movement.
For the hip anatomy.
Yeah. Just joint functions of the hip.
Joint functions of the hip.
Yeah. Instead of going into the squat already. So I like to teach the joint actions first. A basic understanding of what bones are involved. You don't have to go too complex. And then the primary movers of those joint actions. So that when you start getting more complex movements, they understand the verbiage of what you're talking about.
Okay.
Do you agree or disagree? Does that make sense?
And that will all lead into like the movements, right?
Yes, that's where you're going. But at least you're starting with the base and then you're going into the movement. Because really, if you look at it that way, you're only really left with the squatting and hinging, even though everyone else likes to add like lunges. I'm like, once you have the mechanics down and the squat and hinge, you understand all the other movements. There's really no new pattern that's happening.
Just a little other variations of
Little
those
baby
two.
variations, but you understand at that point, oh, I can see that now. I usually just go hip and I don't go into the knee because the way that you taught the hip, they can self-teach at the knee or at any other joint. So they go,
Okay.
how does this joint move? And then what muscles are moving that joint? Then they can do foot or toes or any fingers. Doesn't really matter. They can use the same method, joint action, and then the primary movers into the main movements. So you taught the hip. What would you go next?
We're stood in the hip anatomy, right?
Okay, so so let's say you taught the hip anatomy
Okay.
and the prime movers of each of those movements. Where would you go then?
I'm still debating between the trunk and feel like
Well,
if I were to
to your
look.
point though, you can after you teach the hip anatomy, you can go to teaching squat and then hinging to kind of close the loop.
All right.
And you can kind of see where they're at. Like, I need you to know these joint actions because if you don't learn that, I can't move you forward. That's why I would keep stopping them. Like, I need you to move this so I can move you forward. Once you move into the movements that we talked about, like we had the conversation the other day, what are the rules for the squat and what are the rules for the deadlift? Because if you can figure those two out, then you can figure all the other ones out. So what would you say? I call it points of performance or the rules of a squat. No matter the variation, all these things need to be true.
Depth
Fair?
spine.
I would add one more. Foot position has to be flat on the floor.
Okay,
Right? Because if it's no longer flat, then it's going to be caved in. Everyone screams and shouts, valgus, valgus, valgus. But like if your foot position is good, you're hitting depth, and you have a neutral spine, that's a squat. Right? Doesn't matter what stance you're in, as long as your foot is on the ground, you can be narrow, wide, sumo, toes in, toes out. As long as your whole foot is in contact, you can be elevated even. The whole foot is in contact, and you're not caving in, and you hit depth. Made it. What about for the hinge?
Hinge.
Deadlift, yeah.
Spine and hip.
And hip. So, like, how would you describe that hip position?
Just say hinge, but I gotta dumb it down, right? Because I usually say just hinge. Get it. Well, hips back, spine neutral.
You can do that. I think the major difference is the height of the hips stay the same.
Height of the hip
stays the same.
Oh, okay.
Right? Versus a squat.
It's going down. Okay.
You should. And then the same thing with feet as well. And then next level is talking about, is it a knee or hip dominant squat? A hinge can also be a knee or hip dominant hinge. But we just don't talk about it because it's too complex for them.
Yeah.
Right? You see powerlifters drive more from their quads. Some drive more from their hips.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? But it complicates it for them. So I just don't even talk about it.
Yeah.
I just go with hips. At that point, depending on what you see, you can either go spine or shoulders.
Spine, shoulders.
Doesn't really matter. And then the functions of the spine, prime movers for the spine, joint action of the shoulder, prime movers of the shoulder. And then you can match up exercises. So with trunk, it finally opens up their ability to see what core training is or ab training is. It's just training each one of those functions.
So for core training, why do you think that's more important than the upper body? Going into the upper body, our core is obviously important. Why do you take the step onto
Because it's going to be limiting to what they can do with their hips. So if I'm trying to build a squat and they're just limited by their trunk, I'm like stuck at not being able to build their squat.
So it has, instead of four, has to do with being with the upper body. It's like disconnects with the hips more.
Yes.
So trying to do the
and it's more bang for a buck. Like if I'm going to skip one, I'm just going to skip shoulders. I'd rather do hips and spine development over shoulders. Because it's just the reward for the shoulders is not as great as it is for your trunk and hips. But the shoulders is great, but it's not as important as mom being able to get up and walk versus her pressing or pulling. It doesn't happen as much on a daily basis. That's my rationale why.
What's your favorite core exercise or not favorite but like
just the anything that has to do with carries, because now your trunk stabilizing as you're moving, it's more transferable to stuff. Because every time you take a step, you're having to organize your body.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah,
that's why I like to go heavy. Then you don't really have to do anything. They have to do the task. And sometimes I let it be ugly to a degree. It's not too out of the box to where they're struggling to have to move.
True.
So once you feel comfortable with them understanding the joint actions, then you can ask them to create an exercise for the joint action. Because now they're problem solving for themselves instead of just following exercises. So everyone just does an exercise, not understanding what they're doing. But if you can go joint, action, understand squat, hinge, push, pull, understand how to organize your spine, you can then go, give me a movement for hip flexion. Give me a movement for shoulder extension. And then so they start playing with, then I could just do this with a band or a cable or a weight. It doesn't really matter. I go, correct. Now you opened up all the doors to create a workout. Right? Because all they come in doing at first is exercises. And I like doing it that way too, because when they're trying to problem solve of what's broken or what can be developed, they can just isolate the movements and then they can figure out what's wrong. Or if they don't know, like, well, I don't really know, but I will work all the muscles around it and then I think I can fix the problem. Because we're not going to know. We're not physical therapists. We don't have pictures of ligaments and tendons and the tissue. Like, we don't have that availability. So we're guessing to the best of our ability and best of our knowledge. Questions so far?
Don't think so. I'll ask.
Okay, so first part, broad view going way back. What's
coaching me to you?
Yeah. Because they're going to care or not care at that point. Uh-huh. And then?
As an educator, we have to build or teach them to build a landscape, how to build a program, and the crucial question to ask is, if you were a training mom, what would you have to do? Mm-hmm. There you think about what's the most important factors in fitness, and for that specific people group would be heart health, respiratory health. And so you got to learn the energy system. And also, when we go into more specific, we have to figure out what's the important orders of the movement or the building program.
Uh-huh.
With the movements, it's the hip trunk to the upper. Mm-hmm. Teaching them about.
Now, that doesn't have to necessarily be a perfect order. You just have to get to all three.
Right.
And then there's still like elbows and knees and cervical and things that we haven't addressed. But at that point, they can problem solve for themselves. They understood how to do it.
Mm-hmm. So just give them a broader picture of how humans move,
mm-hmm.
humans react to certain movements. And find a way to teach them how to do those,
mm-hmm.
by having them to learn details like the anatomy, the joint actions, prime movers, and stuff like that. And teach them how to problem solve their body.
So that still leaves us with, we don't know how to assess, and we don't know how to program. So then my brain goes to, well, what are the things that we do have to develop? And so I go first, what are the movements that we need to develop? Movement and energy system that we need to develop. Do you agree going that route?
Yeah.
So squat, hinge, all the variations, push, pull, all the variations. What are the squat variations that would you say are important? Or people think about
the squat variation.
Yeah.
Which is a traditional squat first, but if they can't do it, then we got to think about how to get them to that traditional squat.
Yeah. Well, I think of it this way. All movements that require knee bend.
Oh, okay.
So Bulgarian's in there. Lunges is in there. Lunges, you can argue, because it's half and half. It's not a complete knee bend. It's almost like in the middle of a hinge. But since the hips are moving, it's like hybrid. That's how I view a lunge. That makes sense?
Yeah.
Single leg RDL is a hinge. So like, there's only two. Like, a hip thrust, to me, looks more like a hinge.
It is a hinge, yes.
Right? So it's like, there's only those two. And everything else is a slight variation. If you have the two main ones, you have everything else. What would you say is the goal, generally, for everyone on a squat and a deadlift? What weight should they hit?
Deadlift, two times the body
weight. That's a lot, but I would say, like, at least your body
weight. At least, yeah, okay.
Simple. At least body weight on everything. Right? So yeah, if you don't have that, like that base is so low, you haven't done any of the work. So keep that in mind. Like that's where you're aiming everyone to go. And the same thing with the aiming for the press as well. We might not get there, but that's what we're aiming for. And then obviously starting to go over the different energy systems and understanding high intensity, medium intensity, and low intensity, which is the duration and intensity and rest periods. Those three things.
So you said duration.
Intensity and rest periods. And then everything that goes along with that, phosphagenic, glycolytic, and oxidative, whatever, whatever. Vertical pull, horizontal pull, vertical push, vertical or horizontal push. And so making sure that all those, basically all one, two, four, five, six, all those six movement patterns are in there. What would you do for an assessment?
Assessment.
Yeah. Have you come up with a different assessment?
I usually start in a broader scale. Like I would have to, I'd select one push movement, either a horizontal, vertical. Usually push up. Any movements that you can do in the body weight, I use them as assessment. So air squat, push up, pull ups if they can, which they can't. Air deadlift, I was saying, the hinge, just the hinge movement. But usually I can see that in a squat too.
Yes.
Nice. The way they move their hips on air squat usually tells you how they would move. So push up. Then squat. Maybe plank.
Yeah, so I use the air squat to check for ankle, knee, and hip development. What does that mean? Can someone hit depth that lets me know that they have appropriate range of motion at their ankles, appropriate degrees of freedom at their knees, and ability to pull themselves down through their hips? Right? Depending on how stable that looks, that lets me identify how the rest of the movements are going to be. So they can pull themselves up, down and up. That lets me know they have a strong squat. If they just drop down and come up, they're going to have a mediocre. They probably haven't really deadlifted. And if they're just like very stuttery, can't hit depth, I'm like, okay, we have to rebuild this whole system. Have to rebuild hitting, being able to do hip flexion. Even at, like, I can even see at the foot development, the lack of foot strength, and then hamstrings and glutes on the way back up. All right, you have to fix everything. The push up is so far the best test I can come up with, trunk strength or overall strength. If a male lacks less than 10 push ups, you can tell that this person hasn't strength trained at all. You're going to be unstable. I don't have to do any more tests. They probably don't have one pull-up, maybe one ugly pull-up. As someone who has 30 push-ups in a row, they're going to have probably maybe a body weight bench press at least, and maybe 5 to 10 pull-ups. The stability on the push-up, female or male, gives insight to general strength. For anyone that's listening, the stability on a push-up gives insight to trunk stability of all other movements. You don't need to do any other movements. If a female can do 10 push-ups from her toes, touch all the way ground, all the way up, she probably has 1 to 3 pull-ups, which there's some strength there. If a female can only do 10 push-ups from her knees, that trunk stability is not going to be there to support her. That trunk stability is not going to be there on that pull, the puller. It's just, you could see the transfer. The last test is the bike. I choose the bike over running, the skier, or the rower, because there's no technical ability needed, and there's no downtime. There's technical ability in running, very complicated. On the skier, there's the reset. On the rower, there's the reset, so you don't get a true test. We go 60 seconds for females, 8 to 10 calories. For males, bro, give me at least 12 calories. Come on.
In a minute?
In a minute. Less than that, it's not the most beautiful test, but you can see systems changing. You can first see power output or phosogenic work on the first initial 10 seconds, right? You've seen it before. They start off hard and they tank. You just have not done anything that isn't longer duration. Sometimes you'll see an endurance app, they go the whole minute at the same pace, okay? Just lacking strength. So it gives you insight on how they tackle that test. Do you agree? Have you seen it?
Yeah, of course.
So then, after you do those three tests, then you figure out what's missing. If something's missing.
Within the assessment?
Within the assessment. If something's missing, that's the first thing you program. Whatever they don't have, because that brings up everything else. So even though they want to lose 10 pounds, but they don't have squat mobility, you're not going to lose those 10 pounds because your mechanics, for us, they reach higher intensities, are not there. For me to be able to push you the way that you need to be pushed inside of a squat pattern, we need to develop a squat because otherwise I can't push you and or you're going to get hurt. We need some sort of assessment to dictate how we're going to program. We're going to program for baseline everything. Baseline cardio output, aerobic output, whatever, baseline energy system output. Luckily, from lifting, we're probably going to get some phosphagenic, some glycolytic as well. Agree? We then go to establishing a baseline squat pattern, establishing a push-pull pattern. You know, some of the clients that I'm working on with one pull-up, trying to establish a baseline, which if we chase performance, generally, most of the time, you're going to get the output that they want. No one ever goes, I hate how athletic I am.
Yeah.
They become leaner, they lose body fat, and they gain muscle, and they gain ability for movement. What has fucked everyone up is everyone is trying to go for aesthetics. Like, that's the only goal that people know. And so, like, you never get to the end of it. Like, okay, now what do you do? All right, you're saying you reached 10%. You reached fitness. Bro, what? And it's a very boring goal versus, I think, what you see now that you've had more clients and more time. People enjoy learning and becoming better at movement. And now you have a lot more other things to test and get your athletes excited about instead of only body fat percentage. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Everyone who chases body fat percent, like, okay, fine, then just eat protein and then do fucking 500 burpees a day.
That's why I think, like, sticking in just same exercise is also beneficial that way, because
very beneficial.
Well, it can be boring, but it's your job to make it not boring. Meaning yes. That as long as you progress, like, all right, our assisted pull-up was at 70 pounds, but look, in 2 weeks, we got up to 50. We're almost at one body weight pull-up.
Yes.
Something like there's another baseline that or a metric that you can always use than just from the in-body scan.
And I think you have found what I found. If you hold your ground, do a good job of the educator piece that we talked about, they get excited about it. They're like, hey, can we squat again? Yeah. Yes. Now you understand. This is exciting.
They do get smarter.
They do get smarter. They're very dependent on the trainer's ability to educate. That's one of the issues that I have. Like, if we can become better educators, we're the front line and responsible for how people think about training. If we cave into what they want, we're not educating. We're doing them a disservice, and they're going to get stuck here. Versus, I think the goal should be getting them the components that they need so they can problem solve for themselves. Like, if you need me forever, I did a bad job too. You should be able to go and understand what's going on. I usually want to aim for it to become a collaborative effort than me babysitting it. Like, hey, I tried this squat. I felt this. What should I do next? Let me see it. Oh, okay, I see it. You should try this next. Do you see this? And that becomes a way better journey for the athlete and for a coach instead of you explaining everything all the time. Like, I think that's the higher level that we should all aim for. And then you pass on to the next person, start all over with something brand new. And then they're off onto their own and taking ownership of it. So, on a macro and micro level, what needs to happen inside of a training session? How do we know a training session is good?
Micro level, biomechanics of the movement. Macro level. Are they able to do the things that you have planned for them? Are they hitting? I think those two. So micro level biomechanics.
So what you're saying, a little bit bigger. Did you achieve the adaptation you set out to achieve?
Right. That's what I was trying to say.
Macro and micro. Macro, let's just say strength to make it easy. It could be cardio. It could be mobility. It could be whatever it is, right? It could be fat loss. It could literally be whatever it is. Did you achieve it? It's yes or no. On the micro level, say it's a squat, did you accomplish working sets? Not about the warm-up, not about the conditioning. Did you achieve the adaptation that you needed for that day? And do you take ownership? Is it your fault if you did reach that adaptation or you did not reach that adaptation?
That's the micro level?
And the micro level, yeah. So, both,
right?
Both. On the micro level, though, it's like sometimes you see that one set that was the set that is going to cause that adaptation. Right, you might have had two warm-up sets. You might have had an ugly first set. And it's like that second or third set where they had to struggle for three reps. You're like, oh, perfect. We made it. We can move on now. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Everyone gets stuck on trying to get a bunch of exercises in an hour. Yeah. Which doesn't necessarily... What I see is they end up doing nothing because they're trying to do everything. Instead of like, just stick to the adaptation that you need to do. What is the thing? Is it speed? Did you practice speed today? Everyone moves too fast. Like, the warm-up is, did you warm up enough for the adaptation? Did you prep the body enough for that adaptation? And over time, if you do that every micro time, the macro should be there.
The macro is?
Whatever the broad view is.
Like what?
So, like, did you gain strength? On the day of, is did we choose the right weight and did we rest enough to get the stimulus? Did we get a true 5x5? Or did you get a 3x5? Those are different days.
But is that more important than the micros?
No, I'm saying that is the micro.
Oh, that's the micro. Okay.
Right? If you're training today and you plan 5x5 in your grand scheme of the training for a month or 2 months, but on the day of, you only hit 3x5, you didn't do your job. You said you had to hit 5x5.
Masking is the macro. Like on the day of, this is the micro.
Mm-hmm. So if you're using that as a map for the month, then you need, if strength is the goal for the month, Then is there enough strength days inside of the month? And did you really do strength that day? That's what needs to happen. And it could be anything. It could be weight loss. It could be mobility. It could be whatever.
Whatever.
One thing that you talk about in the beginning is, and I think like the cueing part and your presence. So part of the training, we talked about like exercise science. The other one is like the professional trade of the coach, the way that we stand, the way that we communicate, our tone of voice, how we deliver the information. Usually what people start off and making it too complex, it's the simplicity at the highest level. Communication to get the movement done. And inside that coaching, there's even more stuff. There is like, can you deliver the context? Can you deliver the points of performance? Can you demonstrate the movement properly? Have you done the movement enough times where you can identify when there's faults? And then can you fix it through proper, simple cueing? So that's like a whole different lesson after you're done with all the anatomy stuff and programming. So now you have like anatomy, main movements, programming and adaptations, the actual coaching with the just presence and the delivery of information. And you cannot tackle them all at the same time. You kind of have to choose each one, and everyone is at different stages of that. So it's like, what is your plan to start? One of the hardest ones is programming, too.
Part of the contest that we well, I always find that our trainers are not understanding the whole concept of the programming and the assessment because they don't know the anatomy.
Yes, I agree. That's why I back step 3 steps back.
So, and they just keep asking the same question, just in a different form. But fundamentally, it's the same, meaning that they did not understand how this movement is. Or how to establish those means because they don't know the now. So I think.
So, okay, so what have you tried? And how would you confirm that that information is understood?
So first, I will talk about the anatomy that is around the main movements that we use for programming. So. Well, it's the six movements of the human body. Then having them to memorize and understand how the muscles move and act will have me to confirm that they understand the concept of the human.
So one thing that I found is having them teach you.
Having them teach you.
Have yeah, teach you same. So you go, okay, I want you to learn the functions of the hip movement. Once you're done with that, you're gonna teach me what those are. Instead of memorizing, so they know. Them having to teach puts them in the seat to be responsible to know. And then you can move them on to the next piece. I'll leave you with this last piece about programming. Teaching programming is difficult.
Okay.
And there's different. Let's go and think of the day of. Most of the time, the workout they create for the day is not bad.
Right.
But it's not good. We want to be as precise as we can to get to the adaptation. So inside of a workout, there needs to be some sort of prep. It doesn't have to be cardio. We're really just preparing for the main movement. right? Where, or the main adaptation, whatever the main adaptation is. So if we're doing speed, whatever the components are inside of it's running to prepare for speed. If it's squatting, the hip components that we would need to prep for the squat or deadlift, whatever. Having them question or understand, do they understand what the main adaptation is? Asking them, what is the adaptation that is going to happen if we were to do this workout? Because then they'll look at it a little differently. They're like, well, oh, actually, nothing's going to happen. We can pair stuff better as well. Another common fault that you're going to see is they repeat patterns too many times. You see too many of the repeat patterns. Another fault that you're going to see is not enough volume in whatever adaptation they're going to do. They'll do like a 3x10, and you're like, you just started. Hold on. You ran away from the movement so fast. They're not going to understand energy systems. And getting them to understand you don't have to hit everything one day. You have the rest of the week and the rest of the month just knowing what you missed. So at the end of it, really taking ownership is what you program, is that going to be precise and is that going to help reach the adaptation that you want? And there's also a conversation of, is this a novice, intermediate, or advanced? Is this broad or is this more specific to the person? And what tests are you using to know that you're moving forward?
What are some tests?
The same test that you started with.
Oh, like
Yeah.
hitting those numbers.
Yeah. Or like mine is back squat with some people, trying to get their back squat to body weight.
Body weight, yeah.
The test evolves. So you gotta have some sort of test. Like how else would you know, and how are you programming for it? So I would start with the anatomy, prime movers, and exercises that match those main functions of that joint.
Said anatomy.
Anatomy, joint actions, prime movers, exercises for those joint actions. And this is a side note because you're aiming them somewhere. What are the types of adaptations that can happen? So the, remember, this is when I talked about there's a performance goals, there's aesthetic goals, or there's like non-tangible emotional goals that you're trying to achieve. So aesthetic is composition, it's just manipulating calorie intake versus output. Performance is being specific with programming for the adaptation. And the other one doesn't fit in either of the other two, but you're providing emotional support. That person's probably not going to see results. Yeah.
Do you think that's part of it?
Some people, like people that don't show up, they're avoiding it for an emotional reason. That's like next level, that's higher level. So start with that. We'll see what
What is
happens.
the most important adaptation for general population?
I think strength,
Strength.
because it takes the longest and it solves a lot of other things.
Should we emphasize that more?
In my opinion, yes.
Think so
But
too.
most people would say no. It just takes so long. But it solves balance, it solves agility, it solves coordination, it solves a lot of the software type stuff because now you have a unit and you can match it. You have the ability to create force for you to do whatever movement you want once you have strength. Before that, it's very hard to work on balance. Like if you're working on balance, don't work on standing on one foot. Work on foot muscles, calf muscles, knee muscles, hip muscles, right? Because your glute is the one stabilizing, right? And your feet and your calves. And then you can start doing other stuff. And it takes the longest to adapt. I aim for strength. And then you add sprinkle more. Gotta go. Nice job.